Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films. Craig Hamilton of CitizenCraig.com.
Craig, how you doing?
Hey, oh, I'm good. How about you?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
So, the podcast isn't dead, but the Jedi might be. We're talking about The Last Jedi,
mm-hmm.
the new Star Wars movie,
oh. mm-hmm.
which is of the how many movies have you seen in the theater this year?
This would be. I've seen so few that it's hard to count. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's such a low number that it's hard to quantify.
Right.
The whole zero is zero a number.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a math question, really. I guess we'll get into it. First of all, spoilers. I mean, there's a lot, I think, to spoil in this movie. I was able to avoid basically everything about this film except for the first teaser, which I purposely sought out because I just couldn't help it, and it was really cool. But other than that, I stayed pretty free and clear, and I'm glad because there is a lot of stuff that could be spoiled for me. So I guess just for the sake of our listeners, you know, obviously if you haven't seen the movie, go see it because we're going to kind of get into a little bit of everything most likely. But just that notated, what did you think of the movie?
Oh, I'm just supposed to generally tell you at this point?
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I liked it. I was thinking about my inflection and the proper words used to fully get my feelings across. So let me try it again. I liked it.
Uh-huh. Okay. I mean, you and I are both pretty big fans of The Force Awakens. I put that may be like my number two Star Wars movie after Empire Strikes Back. You like that movie a lot too as well, right?
Yep. Yes.
Yep. So, I was pretty high going to this movie, but I also knew that it was Rian Johnson. I knew there was going to be a different tone. So I didn't really know what to expect. And I really liked it an awful lot. It may fall short from The Force Awakens, but really the two films are so different that it's strangely hard to compare. I mean, visually, they're in the same world, but just structurally and what they're going for, what they're trying to do narratively, but also metatextually for the franchise. You know, The Force Awakens was so much it was like a welcome home party. You know, it was like everything is exactly the way you want it to be. And, you know, here's a warm hug. Here's a hot drink, you know, make yourself comfortable. You're home, you know? And then this one was like, oh, you're home? Cool. Let me, you know, push you out off the couch and burn down your house. It was very kind of a turning upside down of the series, which I loved. I mean, there's a time for risky moves and there's a time for comfort food. And I feel like, you know, after they set up everything nicely in the first one, it was a good idea to kind of ruffle some feathers. And it sounds like that for a lot of fans, that's exactly what this movie did.
It's kind of like, oh, welcome home. Put your feet up. Here's another prequel.
Ooh. Well, that's what we got last year, for sure. Yeah. Well, let's not get into Rogue One, if that's what you're talking about.
No, that's not.
So,
I was just being facetious. I think I'm going into this movie just excited from the Force Awakens, obviously, and not really putting any overhype into it. I'm a huge Rian Johnson fan. And this movie had some amazing moments. I did find myself throughout just kind of thinking, huh, I wonder why they did that.
Okay.
And not being able to figure out why they did that. Or just choices in general from a, I guess from a filmmaking perspective or a directing perspective, but It was a ton of fun. There was enough amazing moments where I can say that I liked it more than I didn't like it, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think The Force Awakens is much better. And you do need, in between the bookends, you need something, as you were saying, really different, something riskier, something depressing, something just kind of stirs the pot, which it did. And overall, I think it was great. But I mean, they did a great job. But sorry, I had to just push a kid out of the. I'm like that guy on the news.
yeah. Your daughter just marched in with a yellow shirt on.
Yeah. Anyway, so
except your wife isn't diving in after.
Right. No, she's definitely not.
she's not as good of a wife. That's the problem.
So I said it was, when I said it was great, I was looking and I was like, oh, great, here comes my kid. Not that The Last Jedi is great.
So it's kind of like you're Chewbacca and your kid is a Porg.
Right. Absolutely.
I guess go into a little bit of, give me an example of something that didn't work for you. I mean, because I honestly, the more I'm thinking about it, there's only like, I mean, the things that didn't work for me are fairly big things. But I can probably count them on, like, one hand, you know? So give me, like, I bet you we share a few. So do you have any specific examples off the top of your head?
I actually do. And in no particular order, Snoke. So if I may, in The Force Awakens, Snoke is billed as this sinister, mysterious, formidable, evil, dark, powerful, dark. He's not a dark lord or
he bad.
He's a dark force villain. Absolutely scary. And in The Last Jedi, he's this Hugh Hefner-esque, thin, skinny guy walking around this red draped lair with swagger. And I half expected a Marvin Gaye record to start playing when Ray walked in.
He's Jackie Treehorn from The Big Lebowski.
Yes, I completely expected him to be, like, propped up on this rotating bed when Ray walks in.
Uh-huh.
It's just, like, it was a completely shift. It's a complete shift in tone, personality. And what they establish in The Force Awakens, it's completely different. Snoke. Now, so I guess the argument could be, well, they didn't really give us enough to really make that claim. Excuse me. They didn't really give us enough to really make that claim, but I beg to differ. He was in the form of this hologram. He just faded away when he was done. He was barking orders. They were fearful of him. And now he's this cocky. He's oozing with charisma and just confidence. And still very powerful in the Force, I guess I should say. But they have this gold robe on him. He's surrounded by those guards, which are awesome. And I thought the design of his headquarters, I guess you would call it, was pretty cool. It definitely felt like a throwback to,
yes,
or a callback to the earlier films.
It almost looked like a Busby Berkeley set or something from like a Hollywood musical, you know, the way that wall was like lit. It looked like a curtain almost that was lit.
Yeah.
It reminded me of Wizard of Oz more than Star Wars.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And you know, there may be something to that, you know, I mean, he is the Wizard of Oz. He is this big, scary face that ends up being this Mr. Burns type character in a silk robe, which I think is intentional. And I think that's one of the things I actually loved is that They set him up as the evil Palpatine character, but then he ends up getting iced pretty quickly.
Yeah, and that's my thing. And that drape just disappears when he dies, and you see the galaxy or the stars in outer space or whatever, which I thought that was pretty cool because I almost didn't even notice it until you cut to over the shoulder of someone and those guards are, like, poised to attack, and then you see his, like, his body cut in half and the drapes are gone. Or the
I did not notice that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's all space. Yeah, and so cool. It's kind of, oh, cool. He chose to design his place like this, which it's kind of this the Snoke that they they created, that they had, that they established for us in The Force Awakens is different than the Snoke from The Last Jedi. And
well, I think he established himself that way. I think he is putting up that front, in The Force Awakens. So, I think he's kind of – he doesn't want everybody to know he's got this sexy silk room, sexy silk red room.
So we're kayfabing this.
No, I think he was kayfabing us.
No, well, the
– yeah, Snoke was kayfabing everybody else.
If he doesn't want anyone to know that, why would he let me in The Last Jedi?
Well, he only let in Hugs and Kylo. He didn't let everybody else in. And that was the first time he was really, like, in the same space as the other people, too.
How do you become the supreme leader of the whole First Order? And I'm not saying this art direction suggests that he's not as formidable villain as he is. But it's just kind of like The Force Awakens established this look and feel of Snoke, and The Last Jedi changes it quite a bit.
Yeah, but again, you had that veneer of the hologram, so you really weren't sure exactly what you were getting with him.
But The Force Awakens knew what they were showing us. That's a
sure.
Legit,
so yeah. So maybe The Force Awakens was kayfabing.
Well, that's what do you start off? You go with what you're first shown, and then it's
right. But again, it's the Wizard of Oz thing. I mean, Oz is not what we thought it was.
We're saying it's a Wizard of Oz thing. I'm not saying they're like, oh, we're gonna trick the audience.
And I think they are.
The Snoke person. We're going to have them debate for 2 years whether the CGI is strong enough where we can pull off actually someone in the room. and then what we're going to do then is dress him up in a gold robe. And he's just going to, like, and when he gets to, he's like lounging on this throne. And when he gets off, he kind of glitchily walks over to Kylo Ren. And I don't know. I don't buy it. I think it weakens, it waters down his, the fear he inflicts on people, at least for an audience member. I saw him, and I thought they did a great job of making of this. The effects were incredible. I'm not contesting that in any way. It's this glittery globe robe. And
look, I thought it was sexy, and you didn't. I think that's where we're just going to diverge.
Yeah, and his swagger and confidence are, and I get it. He is toying with Kylo Ren. And that's totally fine. That's an absolutely good direction to go in this movie, or for this guy to do. But this is the supreme leader who is in command of the whole First Order, who is about to take over the whole galaxy. And
right, but again, like, the Emperor Palpatine was just this old snake in a robe. Like, it's not like he was like a big, you know, scary looking dude.
But
I feel like this is consistent.
But it's not consistent when he's not as scary looking as to, well, let's put him in a gold flashy robe. Okay,
I just want to wear that robe. It looked really
plain and simple,
really comfy. It's the robe.
You can probably contact Ric Flair on Twitter, and he might have one for sale.
That's where they got it. Their production design went on eBay.
Plain and simple.
Okay, it's the robe. Got it.
I
at the end of the day, I liked it because it was a misdirect, and Snoke wasn't as important as we thought he would be. And honestly, one of the things I really loved about the movie, people talk about how The Force Awakens was a remake of Star Wars 1977, but with this film, those parts with Rey and Kylo and Snoke felt like a remake of Return of the Jedi. And I like that because they got that out of the way so fast, and it kind of went the direction that it would have been interesting if Return of the Jedi had gone in, where Vader just doubled down on how evil he was. And here, okay, Kylo does that exact thing.
So if I could spin this off into a positive, because
please,
there are positive things about it, believe it or not. I think their direction with the look and the tone and the feel of Snoke was, for me, it took me out of the movie. But anyways, when they bring Rey back in there, and he's just oozing with confidence. Snoke, that is. And I thought all that, now that stuff was great. And then when he dies, I was so thrilled when he dies. Like, I was excited.
Yeah.
When I finally saw his torso fall over onto the ground and a lot of his body stay there, I was like, yes, he's actually dead. So because I was like, Snoke is based on The Force Awakens, Snoke is insane enough, evil enough, seemingly, to last the entire trilogy. When I saw what they did with him in The Last Jedi in the beginning, by the time he dies, I was actually glad. I was like, good, let's get him out of the way.
Yep.
Because they established him as someone who knows how he can fight with a lightsaber. His ability with the Force is unmatched. As far as the minds goes, when being able to supposedly bridge Kylo and Rey, to be able to just like boomerang the lightsaber handle back to hit Rey in the head and then right back in his hand, that's all fine. He's completely aware of what's in their heads. He knows what they're thinking. And then all of a sudden, I guess he's too caught up in his own confidence. And when he's about to kill Rey, that Kylo turns the lightsaber around and opens it and it kills him, which I was like, that's awesome. But again, it's like, how awesome is this guy when he can't even tell that the Force is being used inches away from him to point a lightsaber at him to cut him in half?
Well, because again, I think that it just sets up Kylo as being the true villain and the big bad.
But so Kylo, okay, so Kylo really, in comparison to Rey, Kylo sucks. He's completely unhinged. He's not good with a lightsaber. He's not that good with the Force. Rey, without even trying, is better at fighting, better at using the Force, and is not even tempted by the dark side. Like, not trying to go off on a tangent here, but she, like, approached the dark side, quickly realized it did not have what she sought, and got away from it. She's virtually unaffected by the ruse and the temptations that the dark side has. And she is just like, she's the best thing about these Star Wars movies so far. Rey, the character Rey, and Daisy Ridley, the actor that plays Rey, is easily the best thing about these Star Wars movies. And I think that Rey as a Jedi, or as someone that can use the Force, is like so much better than Kylo Ren mentally and physically, that when Kylo just turns the lightsaber and kills him, it's like, yeah, okay, I guess Kylo establishes himself as the supreme leader, but he, for the last two movies, he was scared to death of this Snoke guy. Like, this Snoke guy is not just somebody behind a curtain. He is legitimately awesome at being a bad guy. And to just cut him in half like that and kill him, which I was glad because I didn't like the direction they went with him, I think...
I think the stuff had happened with Kylo between, you know, between that. He had seen the way that Snoke talked about him to Hux, and he had, you know, heard Snoke talk about how he was using his weakness and all stuff. So I think there was a motivation for Kylo to turn.
Well, I think the turning is because he feels a connection with Rey, and there's this pull on the
I think that reveals itself not to be true. I think that he a little bit. I don't know. I think all this stuff is shades of gray, which is one of the things I love about it, is that it's not just about choosing right or wrong. It's all these other things.
Kylo can do the right thing, but then he immediately
does the bad thing.
I think Rey experienced the same thing. She went down to that hole, and that's a shade of gray in and of itself.
Sure.
But I think Kylo, the bond between them is so strong. I think it's still there. I don't think it's gone. I think when their lightsaber got cut in half and he wakes up and Hux is in there and Rey's gone. Rey's the one that left. I don't think I think we're meant to think he's going after her, and I think we're meant to think he wants to try and like defeat her since she didn't join him. But I think the reason he didn't cut her head off and killed Snoke instead was because he knew if he didn't, she would have his back if they tried to fight, right? He wouldn't have just, like, cut her head off and then remained under Snoke. It's either do that or I've got to kill Snoke and try to get Rey on my side. And it didn't work. And I think the bond between Rey and Kylo, and if it's not And if the bond isn't what did that, then what are we here for? Then what is the point of the bond between the two?
Well, because they're both strong in the Force. I don't know. I think there's a lot of stuff that, again, this movie raises questions that the next movie will hopefully answer, which is what I like. But again, I think it also lets us draw plenty of conclusions about these characters. And again, I appreciate the complexity. And I think that maybe what this movie is positing that is that this temptation to go to the dark side isn't about if you're a Jedi and you have the Force or not. It actually has more to do with the fact that all the Skywalkers are kind of assholes. And they're just all, maybe they're just all like drawn to the dark side. Like that's why Rey doesn't really have that issue because she's not a Skywalker, which is a reveal in this movie that I love is that she's just a person, which I think is going to be the major theme of this trilogy, which is that the Force has nothing to do with midichlorians or bloodlines or all these things.
Okay.
It's just this, you know, this kid in a stable somewhere has this power as well.
So I think you may be right about that. But it's very possible Kylo was lying to Rey to get her on his side.
About what?
Her parents.
About her parents? No, I think that's done with. I think we
I don't think I'm again, you may be right, and this is obviously something I'm toying with as well back and forth. And the stable boy is a fine example of that. However, it was not cut and dry. You know, they didn't dig up the bodies and say, yes, this is actually my dad. You know, we don't know that. This is Kylo Ren who has been lied to by Snoke, and now he's trying to turn Rey, and he's going to lie to her as well. We can't
but at that point,
her the truth.
I don't know. At that point, I think he's being pretty transparent with her because he's desperate to have her on his side or at least have some sort of connection.
I definitely don't think we should say it's definitely one thing or the other, though. Because,
sure, I guess. Yeah, you're right about that. You definitely can't say that.
So, but I will say one of the best things about the movie is this bridge between Kylo and Rey and their communication. Because what that does, in my opinion, is that it's a great way to have them get to know each other, and you know, as it were, while sort of teaching the audience about Kylo, teaching us about what Luke's been up to, the story of Kylo and Luke, and more about Rey, and more about the Jedi and the Force in and of itself, just by how that works. So I thought they did. I thought that was a really cool mechanism to use, just to kind of a means to several different ends.
Yeah, and I just liked that it wasn't. They didn't go into this, you know, some sort of negative space CGI world plane of existence. It was just a simple shot, reverse shot, you know. It was simple movie magic from the olden days.
That was a nice touch. Yeah, you're sort of, she's looking kind of over our left shoulder.
Right.
And the camera's, and the camera doesn't, you know, put him in the scene.
Yep.
You assume she can see him. And that to me works better.
You don't even think about it because you're not even seeing an effect. It's just your brain is following the rules that you've been taught since you started watching movies.
Until Luke shows up.
I like that one. Until Luke shows up. And that's a question that I had too. Is like, okay, so I guess we never know if anybody else sees them when they're doing that. You know, when they're linking, when they're bridging to each other. But it kind of seems like nobody else can see them, that it's just like a mental thing, you know, that they're just seeing into the space of the other. But then when Luke does it, he is visible to everybody, not just Kylo or Rey. He's visible to everybody, even if they're not strong on the Force. So that was interesting to me, and I feel like that raises another question of just like, wow, so the Force can basically, you know, it's just a whole new power that we've never even seen before, just projection.
Yeah, and I thought that was cool because I was sitting there, and I was like, okay, how did Luke get in? They're trying to find a way out. How did Luke go that way? And that's exactly what they did. They followed the ice foxes.
Yes, the crystal critters or whatever they called them.
Those were great. But Luke kisses Leia's forehead. So not only can she see him and think he's actually there, not even like a hologram,
Well, I don't know. I think she may have known it was a hologram, because that's why she left those fuzzy dice from the Millennium Falcon, you know? If she thought that those were real, she would have taken those with her.
How did he kiss her, though?
Well, he just kayfabed it.
I don't know. It looked like total impact. Like, not like a crash or anything, but like...
like total nonstop action.
Yeah, but then when Kylo pierces Luke,
yeah,
then you know it's a hologram.
Yeah. No, I think that was a worked kiss.
I thought that scene was great when he walks out and then those like walkers, whatever those are,
mm-hmm.
like just like obliterate the spot that he's on.
Uh-huh.
And our theater was there was no applause when the opening credits and the crawl came on. There was nothing like that. So I was the only one. I was like, sorry guys. But they, after that scene, when he's still there, our theater kind of erupted a little bit. And then he fights Kylo, but Luke is making the moves to elude, to avoid the lightsaber.
Yeah, he's never striking. Yep.
Yes, and yeah, like, it's, so you think he's really there, because, like, why would you try to get away from a lightsaber if it's not going to... Well, it's all for the reveal that he was never there. So at first I was like, wow, we're learning a lot of things about the Force. You can fly in outer space. You can bridge to someone else. You can make yourself look like you're there. But before that, it was like, oh, wow, you can be so powerful in the Force that, like, nothing can kill you. But then it was like, nope, not true. He's a hologram. It's just a really good-looking hologram. And so I thought that scene, that the whole staging of that scene.
Oh, so the reason that he could touch her is because when you're strong in the Force, if two people are strong in the Force and they're bridging like that, they can touch. Because remember,
Kylo and Rey
touch.
Yeah.
Yep, so that's what it is. So yeah, so Luke and Leia did touch. So that was a shoot kiss.
It's the second one they've had.
Oh God, yes. So the movie just got a point better for me, because that's a good thought. Then so go back to the fuzzy dice from the Millennium Falcon. Is that a thing from the other movies, that I've watched those movies a billion times and never realized that they were, like, dangling up in the Millennium Falcon?
If it's not, how many points are going to get docked? Zero, I guess.
Maybe. I don't know. That's the thing, is that I was like, oh, am I supposed to remember what that is?
And I don't know what those
dice are.
Like, a small car has huge dice. And then, like, the Millennium Falcon has, like, teeny tiny, like, real actual size dice.
Yeah.
Gimmick
dice.
Isn't
that what it was supposed to be? Yeah, gimmick dice. Yeah, that was one of the my open hand here of things. That was one of them that I was like, okay, I don't know.
Well,
this has never seemed significant before, but apparently now it's extremely significant to at least three characters.
I suppose, and it's extremely significant to a character that's going to be dead before the next movie starts. But I just attributed that to not remembering that it was a callback to something else.
Sure,
maybe,
yeah. I thought I had seen those movies enough times to remember, but I am also not the biggest Star Wars nerd. So, yeah, it may very well be an artifact that I'm just forgetting about. The other thing, another one of those things in my open-handed, my few handful of things, is the moment where Maz shows up, which I liked her okay in the things, but in this one... she kind of shows up and she kind of feels like she's giving Solid Snake his mission at the beginning of a Metal Gear Solid level, you know?
Sure.
And then it just feels like a total mission. And then that mission ends up kind of being completely pointless.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm glad you went there, because that was my next point.
I like the overall thing. I like going to the casino and learning about that stuff and learning about income inequality and Star Wars and all those other things. I like that stuff. I like Benicio del Toro, but again, it was like this, the way it was like introduced and the sum results of it narratively really didn't stick.
This is where the majority of any sort of dislike I have for The Last Jedi comes from this.
Yeah, second.
And I know I just buried Snoke. So you remember when I said that I made a prequel comment? This whole thing on this planet, this really kind of storyline felt prequelish to me. It felt like, let's get an excuse to show them a different environment And it was a little, and it was pointless because I don't understand why Maz was there. Whatever that communication device was in the middle of a middle of gunfire, telling her there is only one person in the galaxy. There is only one person that can break the code.
Unless there's another person who happens to accidentally also be there.
It happens to accidentally also be in the cell that you're in, who can break out at any time, mind you. At any time he can break out. But he doesn't.
Yeah.
He chooses to wait until the two people that need him are there.
Yeah.
And then
he
breaks out. And can I tell you, Benicio Del Toro is the worst thing about this movie for me.
Oh, wow. I liked him. I thought he fit right in there as this kind of roguish, you know, bastard, basically.
Oh, he felt like a newsie with a stutter.
All right, fair enough.
I thought he was going to start selling papes. At any rate, the whole thing is it's pointless. You can't say, oh, there's only one person that can do this, and you go get to that person who's a name actor, by the way. He's and you see him for 2 seconds, barely long enough to notice that he's got the blue pin on his lapel. And so
wait, go back. So he does have a pin?
I assumed it was that guy at the table.
Oh, yeah. He's got the – okay, yeah, I thought you were talking about Benicio. Yeah,
oh, okay.
See, I thought they were going to reveal that he had, like, lost that pin to the artist guy, which, like you said, that's a name actor that they got for that role. I figured they would set up that Benicio lost the pin to that guy in a gambling thing, you know, and that's why he's in prison, and so he ends up being the guy that they should have been looking for. But it's like, no, they found the guy. There just was this other guy, too. Like, that's probably my number one thing in the movie that I'm like, seriously? Like, that's, I feel like I'm missing something huge for that screenplay, that script thing to be there.
This is my number one thing. If this did not happen, I would have liked this movie a whole lot better. And maybe I should just stop letting one little thing affect the whole movie. But it's one thing that's great about these Star Wars movies is that most of them take place in a matter of days or hours. And
right.
This is no different. Basically, the whole resistance is in one big ship fleeing the First Order the whole time.
Yeah, and they keep getting whittled down.
And so now they go off on Finn and Rose. They go off on this adventure, this quest to find, to break the code. And Maz tells them the one person that can do it. They find the one person that can do it, but they don't use that person. They use another person that's in the same jail cell as them.
Right.
And he does it and then betrays them.
But then it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Like, it doesn't matter that they even were able to do that because, right? Because the ships still don't get away.
Right.
Right? So they break the code, but then they get captured, and then he tells them that the escape pods are going off, and so
mm-hmm.
none of that, the whole thing did not matter at all.
Right. Man, it sucks so bad.
But again, I'm okay with flights of fancy in these movies, so I'm okay with, if that was it, but it's really just the basics of the convenience of Del Toro being there and then not having any reason to have the skills that was set up, like the whole reason that they were going to go. Whenever the Maz thing starts, like she knows Poe, but it's like we've never established that she knows like the whole cast.
Yeah.
You know, she was just a friend of Han Solo's.
I mean, I feel like that you could pretty easily get them the information they need to go find this guy without using Maz.
Yeah, exactly.
And you could just put Benicio Del Toro at the craps table and them sort of kidnap him or drug him or do some kind of hijinks to get him isolated to tell him what they need to do.
Right, yeah. Have Benicio be somebody that, like, you know, Poe knows, that was like an old like pilot that was like disgraced. He was a Lando Calrissian type, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. We just improved it.
Because you can't say that. You can't say, "Here's your your snowball's chance, and then, oh, well, there's another snowball.
Exactly. Yep.
It just happens to be right there.
That's
not good booking.
That's bad booking. Yeah, seriously. Who's booking this?
The planet they were on, I like how Rose kind of despises it, and those poor children in the stables. And I think that's what they're going to call back probably in episode 9 with the kid that made the broom move, possibly has a force. I think that whole idea of Rose coming from a planet that was used specifically for the minerals there, and they were all very poor, and the people that took it from them got rich. It all felt very Hunger Games-y. This episodic little side story, I just did not like. I despised it, and I'm sad because Finn was my favorite character from The Force Awakens. He was my favorite performance of that year, and Rose is just as amazing a character, and them two together. And one thing about the Star Wars movies is two characters together, Poe and Finn, immediate chemistry. Rey and Finn, immediate chemistry.
Yep.
Rose and Finn, immediate chemistry. But you have them introduce the two while Finn is trying to escape for good reasons.
Yep.
But you have them meet based on a distrust. And
I'm okay with that.
I feel like the those two together are great. And I'm sorry that they got wasted on some kind of shoddy storyline. And you got to get them out of that ship because everybody, that whole thing is they're just trying to get away. So you got to get them out of there.
I'm okay with them going away and having something to do. I'm okay with economic disparity. I'm okay with all that stuff. It's really just how they got there and why they got there and how it didn't matter really at all. The First Order should have like disabled the Resistance's hyperdrive from remotely, and then that's what they need to break so that whenever they come back, they get the thing from Benicio del Toro, and that re-enables the hyperdrive. But they know that they can't get away, but that still means that Laura Dern can have her moments to use the hyperdrive, and then that and had enabled the, something like that. Because I think that was one of the best moments of the movie, was giving Laura Dern her big hero moments.
You're talking about that warp speed kamikaze shot?
Yeah, exactly.
That moment was met with like less than silence in my theater. It was like they were reacting with their silence. It was insane.
In a good way?
Yes, it was just like the shot
like a gasp.
Was amazing looking. It was just
The way that it was shot and everything was awesome.
And Finn and Rose survive, of course. I think that also gives them an opportunity to be around a bunch of explosions. We see Captain Phasma again.
Yeah.
See people call each other traitor again. And we see that electric bow staff or whatever he had. It's not a bow staff. Anyways, that Laura Dern moment at the end was good. I think sometimes with Laura Dern, though, is that she it's Laura Dern. And sometimes it's hard for me to see past, it's Laura Dern. But I thought the moment they gave her where she just – where her character – and I think I don't know that I doubted her having a plan very much. I think having Poe constantly go up there and say, hey, what's the plan? It's kind of like, hey, give her – let her figure it out. She's got a plan. So I wasn't really questioning that. That was kind of like added tension in that moment there, but her just like warping it right through the ship was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I agree that Finn definitely doesn't have the story that he had in the first one, but I think a lot of that was given to a guy that people have said didn't have much to do in the first one. So I think Poe Dameron is really kind of the B-level star of this one. If Rey is the A-level star of both, and Finn was like the B-level star of the first one, I think that Poe is the this is his movie, you know. This is where he kind of, he's almost like destined to become, you know, the admiral or the king or whatever, the president of the new republic or, you know,
yeah.
whatever. You know, he's just like, he's learning all these things about
yeah.
not jumping into things. He's learning so much from Leia and from the Laura Dern character. And I feel like this was, he had a lot of really good meaty moments where it's like, yeah, you want this guy to just be the action hero and run and blow stuff up, but he's got to learn, you know, how to
yeah.
stay measured, how to assess situations, how to not freak out, you know, and carry yourself as a leader. So
yeah.
I loved all that. And I loved all the shades of gray with her where it's like, what, is she like a turncoat?
Yeah.
Is she a coward? Is she, oh, no,
right.
she's as true to the fight as anybody else.
Sure. Yeah, and, you know, I agree. I think with the way Poe's face fell when Leia said the next in command is the Laura Dern character.
Oh, yeah.
Because he kind of just kind of looks down. He had just been demoted, and now she's promoting the Laura Dern character. And I think, though, because it is Laura Dern, I wish they would have shown her in, like, a previous scene.
Yeah, so it didn't seem like she was just in the green
yeah.
room.
Just like a ta-da! Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of like, oh, yeah, oh, it's her. Because, I absolutely love having cameos in these Star Wars movies. If I was a celebrity, I would want to be in it. And I think it's cool that they're letting, but it's kind of like, hey, you know, if you catch us off guard with that, it's going to kind of take us out a little bit. At least me, someone that just is completely unhinged in this theater chair. Yeah, that sounds weird.
But well, I think for this, she was almost like a guest star on a TV show. You know, it's like,
yeah,
you know, that
yeah.
she wasn't going to, she
yeah.
was, you know, she's not going to be in any of the movies. It was just like, we need somebody for, you know, act two and act three. You know, and
yeah,
we don't have to pay them again.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes. Yeah, and we probably need to wrap up here pretty soon because
my
dad clock is running.
Gotcha. What can't BB-8 do?
he can't make me dislike him. That's impossible.
I just think.
Is he a Mary BB-8? A Mary 2? A Mary R2? What do you call? What's the robot version of a Mary Sue?
Oh, well, you know, I just
think Mary R2 is probably, that's probably the one.
You got to be careful about what all you can let BB-8 do, because then they'll get to a point where it's like, well, wait, BB-8 just re-engaged the weapon system in the X-Wing, but why wasn't he able, you know, it's like,
sure,
if you're going to set the rules in your world, then, you really kind of have to.
It's power escalation. It's like Superman
right.
or something.
You know, like
R2 once
like,
you can turn the back of the world, then yeah, go ahead.
It's like, well, it's like R2 forgot how to do stuff. If you want to think about it chronologically.
Oh sure, yeah, he flies.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Prequels.
And so,
yeah.
And so this is not. I'm nitpicking here, but it's from a future plot hole. It's like, watch out, you know, he's, you know, why wouldn't he be able to, you know, weld the whole ship back together if he couldn't have done that, but. Anyways,
you're not going to get me. You're not going to get me on his bad side. I love the fact that he's the first character in both of these movies that we see. In Force Awakens, he rolls up to, you know, he sees the ship coming in the atmosphere at Jakku, and he rolls into frame. And then in this one, he's on the X-Wing and just kind of, you know, flies down into frame. So, yeah, he's the star for sure.
In the middle of these movies, but the beginning of the second one's kind of we're in action, in the middle of something.
The opening of this movie is just incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing about when BB-8 was decapitated, I was relieved when like he just like rolled over and
just magnetically
magnetized his head. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you didn't want Chewie carrying him around on his back like 3PO in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, man, they just bury C-3PO, don't they? Like they hate that guy.
Yeah, he's pretty obnoxious. He had I feel like he had like the perfect amount of moments in this of like, oh, that was funny. He's being obnoxious, and you know everybody's irritated with him, and then that's it. You know, I don't need him. I know that was kind of the thing with the originals, that it was the whole, that was the whole Hidden Fortress thing with the two spools, you know, and we see everything through their eyes. Yep, I get it. That's not how it is anymore. And if you really want to tell it that way, then BB-8 is your new, you know, is your new working class schlub that we're seeing everything through his eyes. So, yeah, I'm okay with diminished 3PO for sure.
Oh, yeah. Maybe he'll be melted in the next one.
Yeah, maybe he'll just die.
Yeah, maybe he'll die before the next one.
Maybe he'll come back as a Force ghost. Oh, God, I just totally rolled over your thing, and I'm glad I did. I mean, looking forward, are you excited for J.J. Abrams' return now that we have established that he's the best Star Wars director?
So now that he's directed the first one, and now that Colin Trevorrow has directed the second one, I am very excited for J.J. Abrams for the third one.
Yeah, I'm excited. Like I said, I really like the movie. Just talking to you about it makes me like it more. So
good. That was definitely my hope that I would make you like it more.
Yeah. I mean, I've watched The Force Awakens countless times since it came out, so I look forward to revisiting this one a number of times as well. I mean, I'm sure we missed a thousand things. Mark Hamill, I feel like it probably did a better job than anybody was expecting for a guy that hasn't been in a major movie in 40 years or something like that, 30 years. Were you happy with his performance?
Yeah, he's actually been on that island, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's the thing. He got the script for this in 1984. So, yeah, he went ahead and just hung out there for a while. So here's the thing. Was his hair different at the end because he was a projection of Kylo? Because he was, like, appealing to Kylo's memory? Because his hair was shorter and his beard wasn't as gray.
Could be.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That was my theory.
Maybe he just projected that way. Because, you know, I was expecting, I was like, you know what? If he lets Kylo, like, slice him, but he disappears, kind of like how Obi-Wan
like
did,
Obi-Wan, yeah.
That would be pretty cool. And he ends up doing that later. But, yeah. I don't know if that's a projection of how he wanted to be seen or how Kylo wanted to see him. Because I can't remember how Leia saw him.
Well, it's how Kylo would have remembered him, you know? Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't know exactly. I don't know Leia.
Except,
I don't know. Yeah.
Except Kylo doesn't have a shirt on when he's talking to Rey.
Which is how she remembers him.
Right, exactly. We don't understand the Force, I think is what we're trying to say. But we have learned more things about what the Force does that are very true and actual things now in this canon that the Force actually does, despite what it did in the past or may have supposedly done in the past.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a contingent of people out there that are upset with how the rules of the Force are kind of changing and flexing with how open it is. It's really, you know, socialist Force, you know, where everybody gets to be a Jedi, or it's, you know, it seems like anybody can be a Jedi. But I'm totally okay with that. I like the subtext of this movie was let it go, you know, like
we
have to get away from these tropes of these movies and start doing something different. And I love that.
Yeah, and Luke does say, you know, it's not because of me. It's the Force is there. I can just use it. But that's always been true. The Force has always been there, but only certain people that was born with certain gifts can actually use it. And there's been all kinds of different people, thanks to the prequels, that have shown us, you know.
But they've all been in the Jedi framework. You know, it's like. It's almost like, you know, the Jedi controlled the way that we think about the Force for so long, and now it's like, well, you don't need the Jedi. It's like the Protestant Reformation, you know. That's exactly what it is. It's the priests and the clergy are no longer necessary because now the lay people can read, and they don't need a mediator anymore. They don't need the Catholic Church. Ray is Paul Luther.
So that's why they burned all the books. So I think there's...
Well, it's not a literal...
the literalness stops there. I think the dual thing is that, it's kind of like a muggle or half-blood, pure blood thing from Harry Potter. There's actually three elements of Harry Potter in this movie. One is the bridge between Kylo Ren and Rey, and another one is can anyone be born with these powers, or do you have to be in a particular bloodline? And so that kid in the stable is the muggle of the Force, meaning there's nothing in his family line that's a Jedi. He's just able to do it, but he never learns how to use it. Well, then it's no good. So the Jedi priests help him hone that. But I'm of the opinion that Rey is of I think Kylo is lying about her parents. I could be wrong.
Interesting.
I definitely
Interesting.
Think.
I hope you are.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we will find out 2 years from now, right? When J.J. Abrams returns to the franchise. I'm wrapping up because I have to go, but I'm also wrapping up because I'm furious at you for bringing Harry Potter into this.
well, they did.
No, I can't argue with you. That's a fair point.
Is Leia? Do they have footage of Leia for the third movie?
I have to assume they do not.
Then why didn't they kill her off?
Oh, I don't know, because she didn't need to. I kind of expected her to swap roles with Laura Dern.
Same here, yeah.
Yeah, and then that would be it. But at the same time, I'm kind of glad they didn't. I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe it'll be like the Joker in The Dark Knight Rises, where it's just like, whoop. Like, Leia, whoop.
It's like the Scarecrow is a judge in the background. I mean, maybe the opening scene is at her funeral, her burning pyre.
Yeah. I'm totally okay with something like that. You know, I feel like that when actors die and it's not convenient for your franchise, that's on you. Write something interesting. Don't freaking use CGI, and let us mourn the actor and the character at the same time in a way that, you know, works for the story. Like, that's a tough situation for the writers, but guess what? That's your freaking job.
Don't just
put her in a CGI face and have her go ride up motorcycle in the sunset.
Absolutely. I think J.J. Abrams can do that. I think you have some stuff. Don't even show them the back of them. Don't even show a ship explode. Just show people. Open it with them mourning her in some way.
Yeah. Sometimes people die and we don't see it. It's okay.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, this was fun, and I will talk to you again in 2 years.
Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.